I am so fortunate that I rarely get a headache. I can't imagine what it would be like to suffer with the pain of a migraine headache. Actually, after reading my guest's book, I do have some idea, and I learned a lot about this condition, which is not just a headache, but a complex neurological disease, one that can be managed. We'll find out how this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 16th. And we will welcome your questions about migraines this hour. We will welcome your experiences. If you suffer from migraines or know someone who does, we'll get to your calls in just a few minutes at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Carolyn Bernstein. She teaches neurology at Harvard Medical School, is a staff neurologist at the Cambridge Health Alliance in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where she opened her Women's Headache Center. Dr. Bernstein is the author of The Migraine Brain, Your Breakthrough Guide to Fewer Headaches, Better Health. Good morning.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. So a migraine is not just a headache. It's a disease.
It is a disease, and I think that's so hard for people to realize. It's a constellation of symptoms with changes going on in all kinds of different parts of the body as a result of what's happening in the brain. And people can become very sick from a migraine.
Yeah, it's just one of the symptoms. What are the others?
Well, beside the headache, people sometimes will have an aura, which can be very frightening, especially the first couple of times, where their vision can change. They can actually lose their vision and see dark spots. They can see sparkles. Some people will get tingling or numbness on one side of the body or the other, or even weakness, and for all practical purposes, they can look like they're having a stroke. A lot of people get nauseous when they get a migraine. They will vomit, sometimes profusely. They can have changes in dizziness and all kinds of what are called autonomic changes and really feel very sick indeed.
Yeah, and I know people who are sent to bed in a dark room with all sounds muffled out because any sight or sound can be debilitating.
It's almost like your sensory system gets overturned and everything becomes too much. As you just said, Joy, the slightest flicker of light, even a tiny sound, which for you or me right now would sound like nothing, can just sound like somebody's dancing up and down on a steel drum. So little tiny things can affect your perception so much.
Yeah. The headache, however, is also not a minor thing. This is excruciating, it sounds like.
The headaches can be killer. Some of the descriptions that are in the book just amaze me when patients would describe them to me. They will talk frequently. I hear references to the red-hot drill going through my eye. I've heard somebody's taking a hammer and pounding on my head. Just the most violent, dramatic, painful-sounding images that people use to compare what they're experiencing.
Yeah, everyone is different, though.
Everyone is different. That's the thing. And in order to really be able to make the diagnosis, you have to be an informed patient, I think, a little bit, and look at what's happening to you, maybe even write it down for the first couple of times so that your doctor can help you make the correct diagnosis, because there is treatment, and I do want to emphasize that.
Yeah. You suffer from migraines yourself.
I do. I'm lucky. I get them rarely, and with some of the medication that I describe in the book, it's possible to stop them before they really get going. But if you miss that window of opportunity, I have found myself just in so much pain, and as I tell some of my patients, it's humbling to experience it myself. It's just excruciating, and there's really nothing like it. And I have found that when you're in the middle of a migraine, there's this sense that I think we all share that, oh my gosh, is my head ever going to stop hurting again?
Yeah. And while we will talk more about treatment, it was the dismissal that you received from other physicians that prompted your work in this area.
Well, I think the thing that really got me interested in treating migraines was just hearing story after story from patients about how badly they had been treated and how little respect there was and little understanding and attempt to really figure out what was going on, and then I guess a sense of optimism that, yes, there are treatments. Once we make the diagnosis, there's a way to help you get better. So I was looking at that and really just collecting all those stories and experiences that was so motivating for me to really take on this field.
Yeah, and a lot of people suffer from migraines, 30 million people.
I know that sounds like a huge number, but it's actually true. And what I have found is no matter what group I may be in, whether I'm with friends or doing something as a parent at my daughter's school or at work, wherever, I'll say something about migraines or someone will bring it up, and so many people will begin to talk about their own experiences. So I think it touches so many of us, whether we suffer ourselves or whether we have friends or family who are working colleagues who get these terrible headaches.
Yeah, mostly women, at least in my experience, almost all of the people I know who suffer from migraines are women. Why is that?
Well, I think the illness is more common in women. There are different triggers for different people, and one thing that can really trigger off migraines is hormonal changes and fluctuation. So up until about the age of 12, and kids do get migraines, they're pretty common equally in boys and girls, and then after that, the girls just shoot ahead to the point where women outnumber men probably 3-1 or maybe even as much as 4-1. I do have men in my practice. They don't come to the Women's Headache Center. They come to my general neurology practice, and it's interesting. The men often, people are surprised when they say they have a migraine. If a woman says it, maybe it's a little more, oh, yeah, that's a woman's disease. But the men will describe the exact same kinds of headaches, and I think it is important to remember men can get them. But women outnumber men far and away, and they deal with it. Often it will fluctuate with their monthly cycle. And, again, same thing, education is really key because there are things that you can do to try to prevent that. But it is just so debilitating.
We're talking about migraines, what they are, how to treat them, trying to understand this chronic condition. Our guest is here to give you some advice. Millions of men and women suffer from migraines. Maybe you do. Maybe someone you love does. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 16th. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. Ben talking with guests about current issues of the day. I'm sure Ben in his 4 o'clock hour will be examining the Wall Street meltdown yesterday. We'll be doing that after 7 o'clock this morning. Right now, we're talking about migraines, migraine disease. I didn't say simply migraine headaches because our guest says it is so much more. Dr. Carolyn Bernstein is the author of The Migraine Brain, and she can answer your questions about preventing migraines, reducing the pain and duration of migraines, finding your triggers, and understanding the migraine brain. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. Send an email if you care to at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Dr. Bernstein, first, why do you call the book The Migraine Brain?
Well, you know, Joy, there's really interesting research now that I think is it's very important, and it's also validating for patients and migraine sufferers to understand that their brains are different. We've been able to begin to demonstrate this scientifically. Recent studies have shown that on imaging, on MRI studies, there's actually thickening in parts of the brain of people who have migraines compared to people who don't. And it's seen in what's called the somatosensory cortex. That's a part of the brain that relays a lot of sensation. So there actually is a change in some preliminary work of patients who do get frequent migraines compared to people who don't. The brain is adjusting. There are also other changes that are seen sometimes on MRI scans. There are tiny white matter spots, and we don't know what those represent, but they are definitely something that's seen and being studied right now. When someone has this tendency to have migraine headaches, their brains are different. They're like finely tuned racehorses almost, and anything you do that startles the brain is going to trigger off a migraine. So what I describe sometimes is an instability in brain cells, which are called neurons, so that, again, a trigger can set a reaction going in the brain of a person with migraines where it might not in a person who does not have migraines. The brain is just wired differently, if you will, and hypersensitive and ready to just begin to discharge and get this whole cascade of neurologic changes going that triggers off the migraines. So this is really important because what we understand are that there are changes in the cells. The brain itself is adjusting to the migraines, that we need to target our treatment specifically for what's going on in the brain. So the brain of somebody with migraines is different, and I began to call it the migraine brain just because I wanted to highlight for patients that I was trying to educate about their illness, you know what, your brain is really different. And I think a big part for me is emphasizing to people that having migraines is not their fault, that there's something physiologic and different about their brains, that it may not be curable, but it is treatable. And once they begin to understand what's called the pathophysiology, what's going wrong in the brain, that often will be really helpful in finding and targeting the right kinds of treatments.
Yeah. The triggers for a migraine are different for different people?
Well, they are, and that's part of the detective work. Used to be in the good old days that people with migraines were told, okay, you can't eat cheese or chocolate, you can't drink red wine, there are certain foods that you must avoid. And what we're discovering is that it really is more of an individual process, person by person. So you might be able to eat cheese and chocolate without getting a migraine, for example, whereas your next-door neighbor would have one piece of dark chocolate and she'd get a splitting migraine. A lot of things that you might not think of as triggers, when you start to look at them, may actually be related to your migraines. And there's some really helpful information in the book about how to tease out what your triggers are. So it might be that you're the person who every third or fourth day you're running late and you miss your morning cup of coffee, so you have a kind of caffeine withdrawal situation, and that for you can trigger off a migraine. Might be for someone else, on a night when she gets poor sleep, she'll wake up the next morning and have a terrible migraine. Might be related to when you get your period. Could be related to the days that you go to visit your mother-in-law and she uses something really, really scented in her house, and that might trigger a migraine. So once you pick up your pen and you start thinking, okay, what was different about today? What was different about the day that I got a migraine? You might be able to tease out those triggers, and then, of course, the next step is, how am I going to avoid them? The best migraine is the one that doesn't happen. Those are the only good ones, and the ones that, once they get going, medicine may be able to help you, non-drug treatments may be able to help you, but the more that you can try to prevent, the better off you are.
Let's go to the phones. Angela in Whitewater is with us. Hi.
Good morning. Boy, this is a very sensitive issue for me. I do suffer from migraines. I've been really trying to track what could be the triggers for my migraines. My migraines are really not, I suppose, actually diagnosed. I've never actually gone to the doctor to explain to him what's going on, but everything that you're saying has been happening to me for a couple weeks now. I wanted to ask, I'm waking up with migraine headaches. What could possibly be the trigger when you have just gone and you've rested? I wake up to the most quiet music. Okay, some people can't even hear it. So it's not like a startling, you know, typical buzz or an alarm clock that can shock you into waking up. I wake up very calmly. But it seems like the minute my eyes are up and awake, I have that migraine headache. What could possibly be the trigger for something like that?
Boy, those are tough. You know, as I was saying to Joy a few minutes ago, the ones that you wake up with in the morning, I think they're really hard because they're already there. And, you know, you're past the point when you just have the warning symptoms. You have the headache. First, I want to say that, again, in the Migraine Brain book, there are the diagnostic criteria for how to understand whether you do or don't have migraines, because there are actually specific diagnostic criteria from the International Headache Society that you can look at that will give you a very clear idea of, gee, I meet these qualifications, sure, I do have migraines. So may help to take a look at that. Those waking up in the morning ones, I would try to think of everything that happened the night before. Did you go to bed at the same time? Did you have maybe a glass of wine with dinner? Did you eat something different the night before? If they're happening every single morning when you wake up, regardless of what you did, they may not actually be migraines. But if they're sporadic, and the only time that they happen is when you wake up in the morning, you want to first look at what happened leading up to the event and see if there's anything that you can tease out. Do you have enough humidity in your room? Is there recycled air that's blowing through, or is there fresh air coming in? Are they worse in the winter than the summer? So you really do have to do that detective work and try to think about every single variable.
Yeah, and maybe get that diagnosis from your doctor.
Yeah, that's really important, because once you understand what the migraine, what is actually happening, is it definitely a migraine, that can also help you a lot with treatment. I do totally encourage people to go to their physicians, especially when they begin to get these headaches and they're new, so that they do have the right diagnosis. But I understand that, you know, in certain places, you don't, you may not have access to a headache center. And some primary care doctors, they have so much now that they have to do, may not have all the resources in order to understand headaches. So you may get some really helpful information in the book that you can even take with you when you go.
Marcia in DeForest, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm really glad you're on this subject. I have a daughter who is 43 and is a couple months pregnant with her second child. She has determined this pregnancy is going to go ahead, and she just is constantly just plagued by horrendous migraines. And I'm wondering if you could give me any insight, or if there's anything that can be done for her. We, you know, of course, she's reported this to her doctor, and her doctor has also had migraines when she was pregnant, so she's sympathetic. However, there doesn't seem to be a lot that can be done for her, and I'm wondering what you would suggest.
And I'm wondering, are they just they're more intense or frequent because of the pregnancy, Marcia?
They're debilitating.
Yeah.
I mean, she is immobilized. She just is often very nauseous. She just sits and holds her head. She covers her eyes. She just doesn't seem to, she just can't move, and she can't stand almost anything. It just is terrible to watch this happen to her, because she's usually a very active, very energetic person, but she is just totally immobilized. I don't know how many other migraines she had. It's a very good question. I know that she has some, but it's a long 9 months when you're going through something like this. So I thought I would see if there wasn't something that the doctor would suggest.
Yeah, and Dr. Bernstein, we have less than a minute before a news break, so get a start on it, and then we can pick it up after the news if need be.
Sure. Well, that's really hard. I'm so sorry your daughter is struggling so much. But I think Joy actually brings up a really good point. Are these new headaches during the pregnancy, in which case the possibilities are a little bit different? Or has she had migraines all along, and are they getting worse now? With pregnancy, I will say that migraines often flare during the first trimester and then start to wane, so that some women who've been real sufferers before they got pregnant actually do wonderfully well and feel terrific.
Well, that's good. At least that's some hope. We will talk more about this after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about migraines on the Ideas Network.
I haven't got time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain.
We are talking about the pain of migraines and what to do about migraine disease. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcoming your questions about migraines at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Carolyn Bernstein, who teaches neurology at Harvard Medical School, a staff neurologist at the Cambridge Health Alliance in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She is the founder and director of the Women's Headache Center at Cambridge Health Alliance, and she is the author of the new book, The Migraine Brain, Your Breakthrough Guide to Fewer Headaches, Better Health. Just before news time, Dr. Bernstein, we heard from a caller who was concerned about her daughter, her pregnant daughter, who suffers from debilitating migraines. You had mentioned that in some cases migraines will lessen after the first trimester of a pregnancy, but is there any further advice you might have for women who suffer migraines when they're pregnant?
Well, I think the first thing to think about is this a new migraine, or has this migraine been there all along and it's just gotten worse during the pregnancy? So new different headaches, and I do want to emphasize this, that have not been diagnosed really need to motivate you to go to the doctor and just make sure there's nothing else going on. Pregnancy headaches are so tough. I am a big believer in my medical practice and in the way that I teach in a holistic approach to healthcare. So not just reaching for a prescription every time a patient comes in, but what can we really do to improve your overall health? How can I help you think about this in addition to taking medications, or maybe instead of taking medications? And pregnancy in particular is one of the times that you really want to try to avoid putting anything extra in your body beside those prenatal vitamins and some good nutrition. But there are some things that are generally safe during a pregnancy. And one thing may be to take some magnesium supplements. And again, anyone who's pregnant should check this with her obstetrician or her midwife before making any kinds of changes. But sometimes magnesium supplements can help. For a pregnant woman, ice is your best friend for headaches. Mm. And you can take it everywhere. You can always find it no matter what you're doing, whether you're doing errands, whether you're at work. Put an ice pack. Even if you feel funny with it on your head, you can wrap it around your neck, and that may help. Just decrease some of the inflammation in the muscles over the scalp. A big piece for this particular person sounds like the nausea, and there are some natural remedies that I think can be helpful that are safe. Ginger tea, if she hasn't tried that, may help. A lot of the pregnancy migraines are related to being somewhat dehydrated. It's hard to keep up with fluid, but she may find that if she can get more liquid, more fluid into herself, that helps with the headaches as well. So I would recommend that she try something. It's hard to drink a lot of plain water, so it may be that something sweetened with a little bit of fruit juice. Trying the ginger tea may help, so a bunch of different remedies. And finally, if she's really incapacitated, there are some medications that are safe to take, especially as the pregnancy progresses, and I would really encourage her to speak with her obstetrician or midwife about drug choices that she can try, just so that she feels more comfortable.
Yeah, we have so many other callers. Let me go to Frank and Arbor Vita next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you. I'd like your comment or advice on this situation. My wife, from time to time, has the beginnings of what I consider migraine. She has a very shimmery, disturbing vision disturbances, which don't always result in a headache, but which kind of put her down for a while. The trigger seems to be a bright light. And if she's in that kind of a situation and anticipates it by being sure to put on a pair of dark sunglasses, well, she can usually avoid it. Do you have any comment?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Frank, for being an advocate for your wife, and to use that chance to point out that, again, when Joy, when we were talking about migraines really being a whole complex of symptoms, they also affect more than just the suffering person. They affect the whole family.
Right.
And, again, there's a part in the book that really talks about the impact that migraine can have on a spouse or a partner, on kids. So I appreciate Frank's advocating for his wife and his concern for her. It's really nice to hear, and I do see that a lot in the women who come in. They bring family members with them. So what it sounds to me like what your wife may be experiencing are what's called migraine equivalents, or auras without actually having the migraines, and that's really common. Migraines can change. Sometimes a person who's never had the visual symptoms preceding the headache will develop them, and it's always very frightening the first time. And some people get just the aura, which sounds to me precisely like what you're describing. They'll have just those visual symptoms without actually getting the headache. If it's very frequent and very disabling, there may be medication that she can take on a preventive basis, and so she'd have to take it all the time. But often with certain drugs, you can get rid of the auras completely or very substantially. And so if these are happening very frequently when she's driving, when she's out, and just impacting her quality of life, that may be an option. But migraine patients, they are the ones who walk around with their sunglasses in their handbag or their briefcase all the time. And again, I think trying to prevent is really your best offense, being ahead of it. So if she knows that she's going somewhere where there'll be bright lights, just having those sunglasses, no matter how silly she feels putting them on, if it's inside, go ahead and do it. You know, I have patients who walk around shopping malls with all those bright lights wearing their sunglasses. So I think being really tuned in, being attentive, and always having a good pair of sunglasses is going to make a difference.
Thank you very much, Frank. Here's a similar situation from Lorraine in Waterford, this email. I have a constant aura, but I sometimes get a headache, not the painful ones you describe. I've been told I have optical migraines. What causes optical? Is this the same as a traditional migraine?
It's a variation of a traditional migraine, as I mentioned, and some people will just have one. Some people will go back and forth between having both. If it's very frequent, again, I would encourage you to speak to your physician, your primary care provider, about a preventive medication, because it really can get in the way of life and being able to do things that you need to do. Usually, as long as you've been checked out and the pattern isn't changing, it very rarely is it an indicator of anything else.
Beth in Wausau is with us now. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I wanted to say something for the lady that woke up with migraines. I often wake up with migraines, but less than I used to because I got a lumbar pillow, I think it's called, from the chiropractor, and it's really firm, and it's kind of like an indented center, and it supports your neck better. And when you sleep on your side or your back, I wake up with a lot less migraines. But I also want to ask the doctor a question about migraines behind the eye. I don't know if that's the optical migraine you were just talking about, but I often wake up or end up during the day with a migraine behind one of my eyes, and I've had my eyes checked out, and they're fine. So do you have any ideas about that?
That's a really common location for the migraine pain. The ophthalmic or optic migraines or migraine equivalents are when you have visual symptoms, like you see sparkles or a dark spot, but you don't actually get the pain. And the nerve that actually manifests a lot of the pain in a migraine, called the trigeminal nerve, it runs on one side of your head or the other, and it does include sensation around the eye area. So when it gets triggered, when it begins to fire off its sensation, that's why you feel the pain behind your eye. So that's pretty classic to have it in that location.
Beth, thank you very much. Jay in Stevens Point is with us now. Hi, Jay.
Oh, good morning, all.
Morning.
I missed the first half of the conversation, but I have a very strong feeling that I know the cause of the migraines in most cases. I know that the triggers are often complicated and diverse, but my experience has been that mono and diglycerides, the additive in a lot of foods, ice creams, peanut butters, breads, It's a fake fat, and it mimics water. I think it gets into the lymph through the large intestine or the colon, and
yeah, and Jay,
perhaps it even breaks fascia membranes in order to bubble up to the brain. But then it's a matter of squeezing them out of the brain, getting them back, swallowing them.
Jay, thanks very much. We have a weather break coming up in just another minute. Dr. Bernstein, is that a trigger for migraines?
You know, it may be a trigger for some people who eat foods containing those things, but I think, you know, related to what I was describing earlier about the whole pathophysiology of migraines, what we understand is that they're genetic, and we know the genes for some types, although not all, but this is actually some kind of instability in the brain, and people who are vegans, who eat macrobiotic diets, who really steer clear of any kinds of foods with any sort of additives can still get migraines. So I think it's unlikely, if not impossible, that there's one culprit like that. But it is an interesting thought.
Our guest is Dr. Carolyn Bernstein. Her book is The Migraine Brain, Your Breakthrough Guide to Fewer Headaches, Better Health. And we are talking about how to cope with and manage migraine disease. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number. We welcome your questions. We welcome your experiences, perhaps. 1 in 5 women, 1 in 20 men suffer from migraine headaches. Are you one of them? Do you know someone Who does? Probably. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. And I hope that if you are in the Superior region on Friday, this Friday, September the 19th, you will stop by Barker's Island Inn and Conference Center because I'll be broadcasting live from there. Our joyride is heading to Superior this Friday. We'll talk about fun things to do in Superior and northern Wisconsin. We'll talk about the latest in state and national politics. And we'll have two local guests on for our Week in Review program. That's this Friday in Superior from 6 until 9. You can stop by, watch the broadcast live from Barker's Island Inn. You can ask a question of the guests live on the air. We'll also have a breakfast after we're off the air after 9 o'clock. You can stay for that. It's all free. It's open to the public. I hope to see you there in Superior when the joyride hits the campaign trail in Superior this Friday. We'll be visiting a different community every week between this week and the end of October. You can go to our website for more information on all of the broadcasts, all of the events, WPR.org. Talking with Dr. Carolyn Bernstein for the rest of this hour about migraine headaches and migraine disease. She is the author of The Migraine Brain. And our next caller is Lee in Shawano. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Lee. Hi, Joey.
Hi.
I'm saying hi to myself. Hello, Dr. Bernstein. Yes, honey, it's an honor talking to you because, oh, my Lord, we've been just... I don't know where to begin. I remember when I was young, my mother had these migraine headaches, and then I seen her suffer so badly, and then as I approached into my 20s and 30s, I started having the same symptoms she did, and now that I'm past 40s, mine seemed to disappear. It seemed that as I got older, they got better and better for me, but now I have a daughter in her 30s, and she's seeing a doctor presently. She has horrible migraines. Mm-hmm. Can it be as one gets older, they sort of disappear? And also, doctor, is it heredity, runs through families? Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Well, that's a great question, and I think two pieces. First of all, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we are understanding more and more about the genetic link, and unfortunately, it's likely that if you have migraines, that your daughter will have them and that the pattern of her migraines will be similar to yours, which is exactly what you just described to us. They often will go away for women after they go through the change, and that is something to kind of keep out there, keep in mind for women who begin to get them. When they start to get their periods, they often will flare in the 20s, sometimes the 30s, and then begin to wane like that. So that's a pattern that I just see over and over again. And again, I would really encourage you to speak to your doctor. There may be some hormonal treatments that can be really helpful in terms of preventing them. There may be some specific abortive-type treatments that you can use if you can target exactly when during the month you're most likely to get the migraines. You can treat them that way. So lots of different possibilities, and what you describe is very common. It's just a classic presentation within a family.
Yeah. Lee, thank you very much for the call. You know, migraines didn't run in my immediate family. No one that I'm aware of had a migraine. But my sister's daughter, when she was in her late teens and early 20s, really had a problem with migraines. So it certainly could have come from the other side of the family there.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's not possible to find the link, or they'll start appearing by themselves. But I think as we get better at understanding specifics about them, we will be able to maybe predict a little bit more who's likely to have them and what the course is likely to be like. And that piece, if your mom had them and you've got them, asking your mom some questions, when did yours come on, when did they go away, was there anything that helped you, may help you yourself manage your own migraines better.
Yeah. You mentioned in the book, too, that teens who get them can, grow out of them.
That sometimes does happen. Mm-hmm. There are some kinds of migraines that are much more common in children, actually. Some of the ones that have a really dramatic presentation, such as what are called basilar migraines, Kids will often outgrow those, and those ones we do know fairly well what the genetic pattern looks like. So sometimes people will get them when they're younger, and then they'll just begin to disappear and wane, and you have to kind of keep track of them, keep on top of them, and be aware of what's changing.
Interestingly, when you mentioned that vegans or vegetarians can also get migraines, my niece, who suffered severely from migraines, a vegan, so they're not as bad now as they used to be, and she was mainly using Excedrin PM, I think, or Excedrin Migraine, just sort of an over-the-counter to take care of the pain. Is that a common treatment of migraines, just over-the-counter Excedrin?
You know, sometimes that works, and it can work really well. The problem with some of the over-the-counter medications is that they can cause tremendous rebound because of what's in them. A lot of them have a combination of Tylenol and caffeine, sometimes ibuprofen, and those things, if you start to take them more and more frequently, then your body almost craves them, and you get a withdrawal headache from not having them. So I think those are a great option for someone who's getting an occasional migraine. Caffeine is one of the oldest migraine drugs that there is. If you're really stuck and you don't have access to anything else, get a cup of coffee or try a Diet Coke, because chances are it will at least help. But when the migraines are coming on frequently, that's when I really want to encourage people to think, what could I do to prevent them?
Yeah.
You know, am I getting these once every 2 months, or am I getting two or three a week? If that's the case and you start to use the over-the-counter medications, you are a setup for getting rebound headaches, or what's called medication overuse headaches. And that can just get you into a very difficult place where it's awfully hard to be able to climb out.
Maria, formerly from Kenosha, Wisconsin, who's now living in Poland, sent this email. What does Dr. Bernstein think about the connection between suppressing strong negative emotions and migraines? I suffered from migraines from childhood till I was about 34 years old. I've become completely headache-free once I started paying close attention to my true feelings and learned how to express my anger. And she goes on, is there a connection between negative emotions and migraines?
Well, again, another wonderful question. I think that everybody is a little bit different. What we understand about migraines, and what I really want to emphasize for the listeners, is that they are real. They are physiologic. Changes are happening in the brain and in the body as a result of these events. There's a link for many people with depression and migraines, so the two can exist together. And oftentimes, one will not get better until you address the other. But I think whatever this person was able to do to help herself feel better is wonderful. I don't know that there's any really good data that says that repressing emotion can cause migraines. So I would look at it like that.
Yeah, I know that your emphasis is a prevention of migraines, but are there any new prescription drugs on the market or new treatments that offer hope? I remember Carmen Jackson, the producer of this program, who suffers from migraines, just going from doctor to doctor or treatment to treatment and never really getting a full handle on her migraines. Is there something new out there now?
Well, there are some wonderful medications in a drug class called triptans, which is T-R-I-P-T-A-N-S. And these are medicines, most people can use them safely, not everybody, but they are medications that really stop or abort the whole migraine process before it gets firmly entrenched in the brain. They come in some really interesting formulations so that if you're a person who is really nauseous, let's say, and can't swallow a pill, there's a form that you can spray up your nose. There's a melt tablet. There's an injection, even, and it comes in a little, very easy-to-use preparation so that you don't have to do a whole lot other than clean off your thigh, put the injection over it, and then push a button. And these drugs work so quickly. They work within 10 to 15 minutes, and what they do is not only stop the process from going on, abort the migraine from where it is, but they can also get rid of the other symptoms, such as the nausea, the sparkling light, some of the photosensitivity. You have to know exactly how to use them and use them in the right way, but they make a huge difference. And there are some very dramatic stories of people using a triptan medication right before something critical that they have to do, a talk or athletes using them before a football game, let's say, or a big tennis match, and being able to stop the headache. So, again, those are the kinds of medications that, unless you're diagnosed as having migraines, you won't have access to them. You need to see someone who can treat you properly, make an assessment, and figure out whether that's a safe drug for you. But, boy, have they turned things around.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Bernstein, for being with us. I learned an awful lot reading your book and talking with you this morning. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Dr. Carolyn Bernstein, author of The Migraine Brain, Your Breakthrough Guide to Fewer Headaches, Better Health. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, who produced this program. Thanks to Bill Martins and Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. Thank you for listening and for calling in. Hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.